Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 134, Sign Language for Babies, January 25th, 2008. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
There have been amazing long-term studies that have shown that babies that sign often have higher IQs, better reading and spelling skills, more interest in books, and a much more sophisticated understanding of language overall. And again, it's because of that early jump start on language. And then the added benefit, like I mentioned, of the right and left brain coordination, that it being a visual language taken in on the right side of the brain but stored and processed on the left. And as you mentioned, studies have shown that when a child is exposed to a second language early in life, it makes learning any language anytime later in life much easier because, again, it's laying those pathways and firing up those synapses for early language development. I really hope it gets to the point where signing with a baby is just the norm. It's just what you do, just like parents now realize that breastfeeding is generally the norm and one of the most beneficial things you can do for your baby. I really hope that American Sign Language for Babies becomes such a norm as well.
That was the voice of my guest, Nancy Hanauer, BA. Nancy Hanauer is a pioneer in the field of American Sign Language for hearing families. Nancy was one of the first teachers creating and providing classes in North America. Her business has been featured in numerous newspapers and magazines. In 2005, she was quoted in an article about infant sign language in the Life magazine insert of the Chicago Tribune and the LA Times. She was named Seattle's best-known baby sign language instructor by the Seattle Post-Intelligencer and a person you should know, baby whisperer and infant sign language communication expert by Seattle Magazine. Nancy began her baby sign language business, formerly known as Signing with Your Baby, on a part-time basis in September of 2000. Due to the amazing response to her classes and workshops, the business quickly became a full-time venture. It took Nancy 2 years to teach her first 200 families, just 2 months to teach the next 100 families, and less than 5 years to teach more than 1,000 additional families throughout the Seattle area. Now, here's the interview. Nancy Hanauer, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, Dave. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, as I'm sure you know, having explored the site, that this show is all about psychology, and people might wonder why I've invited you, a non-psychologist, as a guest, but the communication between parent and infant is really the foundation upon which all later psychological development rests. So I think you're a very relevant guest.
Well, thank you. Yes, I thought the same thing as I perused your site. I thought, oh my goodness, I'm the only person that doesn't have a PhD, so thank you for inviting me.
Well, I'm not sure that you're the only one. For example, I interviewed a Tibetan Lama, and I don't think he had a PhD.
Well, there've been a few others. I'm definitely in good company, that's for sure.
Yes. And they with you. So why don't we start out by having you tell us how you got into teaching infants and their parents sign language?
Well, I started my career about 16 years ago, and I was a special education teacher, and I started out teaching deaf and hard of hearing kids. And right out of college, I had deaf preschoolers, and they would come in sometimes from recess, and they would be crying, and I'd sign, "What? What?" And they would look up at me with just big tears rolling down their eyes and a blank look on their face. And even though they were 3 and 4 years old, and some of them had been in school already for up to 2 years, they didn't have the language skills, even the sign language skills, to tell me what was going on yet. So they would expect me to act out and sign and guess and pantomime everything that I thought could have happened on the playground to make them cry, which is a lot of things, and a lot of things I never even thought of. And we'd go through that big procedure sometimes for about 10 minutes, and still I wouldn't know what they wanted, and they would just walk away totally frustrated. I was frustrated, and I thought, oh my goodness, I've chosen the wrong career. I have no idea what these little people want. And at that time, I heard about a book that used a system of made-up gestures with hearing parents and hearing babies to aid early communication and reduce frustration. And I thought, what an amazing concept. Hearing families are going through that same frustration with their hearing babies before they can speak that I'm going through with my deaf preschoolers before they can sign. So I filed that away in the back of my mind, and I continued on in special ed. Eventually, I started teaching art on the side, and 7 years ago, I left special ed to teach art on a full-time basis. I developed a baby sign language class completely on a whim. I threw it into the mix of classes that I was offering throughout the community, and that just exploded. And that was 7 years ago, and more than 1,400 Seattle area families have passed through my four-week classes in that amount of time.
Wow, that's got to be very gratifying. Now, it sounded like you said teaching art.
Exactly.
A-R-T.
So, A-R-T, yes. Okay. I taught art on the side for a little while.
Oh, okay. So you taught both art and this ASL to babies.
Well, the art was generally elementary age kids and some toddler classes.
Yeah.
I haven't taught art to the little tiny babies yet. That would be an interesting
right.
concept to look into.
Yeah, right. No. So let me just back up a little bit and ask what I gather you first, you started out in special education and for some reason you decided to learn ASL, American Sign Language, to work with the deaf. What drew you to move into that direction? I mean, that sounds like a big learning project right there, just to acquire that language.
Well, my degree specifically was in, or my certification, I should say, was specifically in deaf and hard of hearing. So my degree is in special education, and I went to school in Wisconsin, which is where I grew up, and each certification in Wisconsin is specific to the area you'd like to teach in. So as part of my college curriculum, I had to learn American Sign Language. So I took about 2 years of American Sign Language in college and went into the field of special ed intentionally, just planning on teaching deaf and hard of hearing kids. Eventually, when I moved to Utah and taught there and then taught here in Washington State, I did teach other areas of special education. But I got into it, you know, and it's odd because most people that end up in the field of deaf education or as a sign language interpreter or working with the deaf in some capacity have some link to deafness in their past.
That's what I was wondering.
Friend. Exactly, either a deaf friend or, you know, playmate as a child or a cousin growing up. And actually that came about as part of an aptitude test in high school. We were given the aptitude test for future, you know, possible careers, and teacher of the deaf was on my list of possible professions. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. It was so specific, but I thought probably just like teaching hearing kids, but through sign language. And actually it's not, because most deaf kids also have additional handicaps. So I worked with multi-handicapped hearing impaired kids. So it was very intense work. And that's one of the reasons why the baby sign language, I think, has been so gratifying to me, because, oh, it's just so much easier. And it's just the payoff is so immediate, so much more so than with special education.
Yes. Now, you mentioned that you had encountered the book that in which they developed some kind of special language just for the process of improving nonverbal communication between parents and child. But you've been using the standardized American Sign Language. Were you the first person to do that, or were there other people who were already using ASL to teach hearing parents and infants?
There were other folks doing it. There were two books that came out about the same time, again, about 16 or 17 years ago, and one was based on the system of made-up gestures, and then one was based on American Sign Language. And when I had the idea to teach sign language classes for hearing parents and babies, I actually didn't know about the one book based on American Sign Language. I just knew about the created gestures. And I'm a strong proponent for American Sign Language for several reasons. First of all, it's a the legitimate second language. 20 million people in North America rely on it as their main means of communication. So if you start teaching your baby or your toddler American Sign Language, chances are they're going to encounter others that use it as their main means of communication by the time they're in elementary school. And as a former special education teacher, I know that. I know the amount of mainstreaming and interaction between special needs kids and normally developing kids. American Sign Language is a legitimate language. It's an unlimited language. And they've actually done studies that have shown that babies prefer American Sign Language over pantomime, and they've looked at brain activity, and the babies actually seem to understand that this is a legitimate language and is stored appropriately as a language versus when, you know, babies are exposed to made-up gestures or pantomime. So I'm a strong proponent for American Sign Language, and since then there have been several books that have come out. I'm in the process of writing a book myself, and I've published two sets of reminder cards for parents, so there's a lot of materials now, and pretty much everything else is geared towards the use of American Sign Language instead of the made-up gestures.
Okay, that's all very fascinating. Now, pardon my ignorance here. You know, certainly I've heard of ASL, American Sign Language. That almost suggests, just in its name, American Sign Language, that there might be competing systems or a different one for each other country or language. Is that the case? Are there lots of different sign languages, you know, one for each country or language group, or is American Sign Language has that sort of spread across the globe much as English is doing?
That's a great question. Most people do assume that it is universal, and sadly it's not. American Sign Language is used in the U.S. and Canada, and then any other country that you go to will have its own version of sign language. There is some crossover, however. If you got a group of deaf people that don't speak each other's language in a room together and a group of hearing people that don't speak each other's language together in a room, definitely the hearing impaired folks, the deaf people would be signing and communicating much more effectively before the hearing people would. Much of American Sign Language is iconic, and there are some signs that are the same in other cultures, and it's of course social and language. So sadly, it's not universal.
I think your call waiting just cut out a little segment, but that's okay.
Oh, okay.
I was on your website, and I noticed that you changed the name of your company from Signing with Your Baby to Hop to Sign-A-Roo. Where did that come from, and why the change?
Well, initially, when I started out 7 years ago, what I was doing was so unusual that I had to make it blatantly obvious for people what I was doing. So Signing with Your Baby was the generic name of my classes and my business. And it was funny because in the beginning, people still didn't understand. I remember the first center where I offered my classes. When people were calling in to register, the woman at the front desk kept trying to convince them that it was singing with their baby. And she clearly hadn't read the job the course description. And then about a year later, one center advertised it as swinging with your baby. And I was like, no, signing with your baby. And then eventually I got to the point where I needed to create a company identity and a brand, and Signing with Your Baby was just too generic, too much of a generic phrase. So I came up with the Hop to Sign-A-Roo and the little kangaroo, the baby kangaroo that's signing I love you, and have created a brand. And so my goal, of course, is for that to become a nationally known brand. I'm very well known in the Washington State area, but big plans to take it national.
Okay, we'll come to those plans more. I'll talk about that with you some more as we towards the end. Now, many of us have probably seen the movie Meet the Fockers 2. Mm-hmm. I hope I said that right. Mm-hmm. In which they show a signing baby. And if any of my listeners have not seen that, be sure to rent it. It's a hilarious comedy starring Ben Stiller, Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, and Barbara Streisand. And they're each marvelous, I think. So how accurate a depiction was that in that film? I'm assuming you've seen it.
I have. It's been a couple of years, but there are a couple of things that stuck out in my mind immediately. Some of it is accurate, some of it is not. Initially, the movie starts out with Robert De Niro flashing flashcards at the baby in a makeshift classroom. And so that was my first concern, because I didn't want parents to think, oh my goodness, this is this whole other, you know, big production procedure that we need to add to an already busy day. Babies don't learn through flashcards. Adults learn with flashcards, but babies don't. So babies learn the signs when they're modeled throughout the context of their normal day. So as you feed the baby, you sign milk or food, and the baby will start to associate the signs with the activity and eventually sign the signs back. So that's the first misnomer, is you don't have to sit down with your baby and flashcards, and that's not going to work. The other thing that I thought was very funny was at one point the baby in the movie signs, "I'd like to eat more, please, then I want to go potty and take a nap." And I'm sitting in the theater thinking, oh my gosh, no one's ever going to come to my classes because parents think that they can't sign all that. And then if they do, after 4 weeks with me, they're going to say, "Nancy, we want our money back. Our baby's not doing complete sentences with sequencing and preferencing like in Meet the Fockers." So that was a little bit of a misnomer. The babies initially start out signing 1, 2, maybe 3 signs per sentence. The babies will start to string the signs together by themselves as early as 8, 9, 10 months of age, but we're not working on complete sentences. But there are some really great examples in that movie where the baby is signing appropriately. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag. Some of it's pretty accurate. Some of it's a little bit embellished for Hollywood standards.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So the baby really was a signer, had been taught to do it to some degree.
Exactly. The baby actually was two babies. It was a set of twins, and mom was a speech therapist.
Uh-huh.
And had been signing with the babies since the time the babies came home because she knew American Sign Language. And so those were little one-year-olds and two little boys that played the role.
Well, that concept had never even occurred to me until I saw it in the film. And then it raised the question in my mind, gee, I wonder if this really does go on or not. So I was excited to learn of your work and, you know, to find out that, hey, this is a real thing and it's really happening. And then I was talking to my own daughter about this, and she said, oh, yeah, they have classes in that around here. So I guess it's something that has spread to some degree.
Yes, it is taking off. I was one of the first in North America teaching classes. Like I said, when I started out 7 years ago, it was pretty obscure. There were probably only about 3 of us teaching classes across the country. And now there's hundreds of folks teaching classes. And again, most people are teaching based on American Sign Language. There are some programs based on the made-up gestures. So you do have to be careful and become an educated consumer and parent, decide which track you really want to take. I think there's a lot of benefits teaching American Sign Language, as I mentioned earlier, it being a legitimate language, teaching a sensitivity at an early age for others who use it as their main means of communication. Babies who sign actually use their brain in a very unique way because American Sign Language is taken in on the right side of the brain because it's visual, but it's stored and processed on the left side of the brain. So babies that use American Sign Language open new synapses and pathways between the right and left hemispheres in a completely unique way. So there's a lot, and I know parents have a lot on their plate when they're deciding which classes to take and what sorts of things to try with their baby, but it really helps to be an educated consumer because there is a lot out there now, people jumping on the bandwagon just because it's the new trendy thing to do.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a really basic question, and you've already spoken to it in many ways, but there might be more to say, and that's, what's the reason for teaching parents and babies American Sign Language? You know, I'm a parent. Why would I want to do that?
The main reason is to reduce everyone's frustration. As early as 5, 6, 7 months of age, babies understand far more than we have ever given them credit for. They have much higher cognitive skills than we had initially realized. They have an understanding of language. They have a very strong desire to express language. However, their vocal cords are not going to be fully formed until at least 16 months of age. But as early as 5, 6, 7 months of age, babies have the manual dexterity, the cognitive ability, and the memory to execute sign language and use that as a temporary means of communication. So initially, the goal was to reduce everyone's frustration, get that communication, that two-way communication between baby and parent started much earlier than typically anticipated. Even though babies are speaking a little bit at 12, 14, 16 months of age, the things they say are going to be very baby-centric, and they're really not going to be that relevant to parents, and there are going to be some speech sounds that are still not intelligible until closer to 2 years of age. So most babies' first words are things like ball or doggy or, in my case, shoes. I absolutely love shoes, so that was my first spoken word as a baby. I had one client who said her little one's first word was lawnmower, which is quite a mouthful, yeah. And that's all they heard all day, lawnmower, lawnmower, lawnmower. So with American Sign Language, you empower the baby to say, feed me, change my diaper, my head hurts, I've got an earache, I've got a tummy ache, all those really parent-centric basic needs. And then beyond that, there are amazing long-term benefits that researchers have stumbled upon.
That's all very helpful. And when you talk about reducing frustrations on both sides, I guess you're referring to the situation where a baby can't communicate its needs, and so it cries or it whines or it makes some kind of annoying noise, and the parent is kind of grasping for different alternatives to quiet the child down but doesn't really know what it needs. Is that right?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what happens. That's what happens from the time you bring them home from the hospital. That's all they have is just to cry. And eventually they get to the point where they are able to, you know, point or gesture. And as early, like I said, as 5 months of age, those babies have those skills. They have control over their hands. They have the manual dexterity. And they start getting very frustrated because, again, they're understanding so much of what you're saying. I don't think we ever really realized that babies at 5, 6, 7 months of age were understanding as much language as they were. And now researchers are doing all sorts of studies in baby brain development and language acquisition and that sort of thing, and realizing that, oh my goodness, they are understanding and they're creating higher level thoughts of their own, and they just don't have the vocal cords to express that. So the frustration sets in very quickly.
Interesting. So do you start at 5 months, or what age do you start the teaching? Typically,
I recommend my family start at any time from 5 months on, and there's a couple of reasons for that. Babies don't have complete visual acuity until about 4.5 months of age. Again, at 5 months, they're starting to figure out that they have control over their hands. They're starting to understand so much more language. Memory is really kicking in. And also, that gives the parents a little more time to ease into it and make it part of their daily routine without feeling a lot of pressure. Sometimes I get calls from parents at 7, 8, 9 months of age, and you can certainly start at that point. It's not too late. But what the parents find at that age is that the baby is extremely frustrated because, again, the baby's been understanding their parents' language for, you know, 2, 3 months at that point, and they don't understand why the parents don't understand their crying or their whining or their babbling.
Mm-hmm.
So my classes are devised for parents in the 5-month to 2-year-old range, and I get people pretty much in the 5 to 8 months spectrum, I would say, is the smallest gap, or most folks are coming to me at that point.
Do you have any sense of what the impact is on the relationship between parent and child? Because I would expect that this would have some implications for their relationship and how they get along and bonding and all of that.
Exactly. That's been one of the amazing long-term benefits. People started doing this because they wanted to reduce their frustration, but now researchers have done long-term studies, and some kids have been followed for up to 16 or 17 years now, and they found that in many cases, those parents and those now teenagers are much more bonded and have a much better relationship and sense of communication. And that only makes sense because, think about it, if you're able to communicate with your child, your baby, at a very early age, you know, a couple months into their life, you're able to communicate in a very positive way, that's going to set the stage for your relationship with your child for the rest of your life. And so I've only worked with kids, like I said, the babies for 7 years now, but I've had many parents report back when they go off to kindergarten and say, oh my gosh, my child is so much calmer than the other kids in the kindergarten class. My child makes eye contact. My child knows how to interact with adults much more positively, and we're convinced it's because of the sign language, because the child had this ability very early to connect with adults in a very positive way. And I can't wait to hear from my parents in another 10 years and hopefully hear that they're much more connected with their teenagers than their peers, because that's what some research has found, that it really sets the stage for a much better relationship from the beginning.
Wow, this is absolutely fascinating. And it really makes sense to me that it would play a very positive role in terms of brain development. For example, we know that people who learn two languages, you know, who are multilingual early on, learning two or more languages, they actually score higher in IQ, standardized IQ tests. So we know that it's good for intelligence, it's good for the brain, and American Sign Language is, as you point out, evidently it is a complete language in itself, and but then there's this added dimension of the physicality of it, so that it's developing, as you pointed out, also the right side of the brain as well as on the left side.
Exactly. There have been amazing long-term studies that have shown that babies that sign often have higher IQs, better reading and spelling skills, more interest in books, and a much more sophisticated understanding of language overall. And again, it's because of that early jump start on language. And then the added benefit, like I mentioned, of the right and left brain coordination, that it being a visual language taken in on the right side of the brain but stored and processed on the left. And as you mentioned, studies have shown that when a child is exposed to a second language early in life, it makes learning any language anytime later in life much easier because, again, it's laying those pathways and firing up those synapses for early language development. Mm-hmm. So there have been amazing long-term studies, and I think that the studies will just continue, and I really hope it gets to the point where signing with a baby is just the norm. It's just what you do, just like parents now realize that breastfeeding is generally the norm and one of the most beneficial things you can do for your baby. I really hope that American Sign Language for babies becomes such a norm as well.
Interesting. Yeah, sure. Why not? Now, do you typically teach in groups or individually?
I typically teach in groups. I teach through some local hospitals here in the Seattle area, and then I also go into clients' homes. So if four or more families get together, I'll come out and teach the four-week series in their home. It's much more convenient for them. It's scheduled at a time that works for them, and again, in the comfort and convenience of their own home. Some folks do choose to come to me through the hospitals, and I do some private instruction, some one-on-one instruction. Generally, I teach a four-week class, but then some folks don't want to make that four-week commitment and they just want some basics, so I also offer a two-hour intensive workshop. And what's been nice is I've tapped into two of the local library systems. So I've been doing a lot of presentations through the local libraries and meeting parents that way, and also doing some training for the children's librarians so they can start integrating some American Sign Language into their story hours.
Well, I wonder if in the process of doing this now for many years as you have been, if there are any incidents that stand out, any stories that come to mind of either frustrations, breakthroughs, funny things, anything come to mind?
Oh, there's so many. That's one of the things that I love the most about my job is that I hear back from my parents often. And because I've been at it for 7 years, I think one of the most common comments that comes back to me are the families that contact me after they've had a second baby. And they say, oh, we took the class with you 4 years ago when our toddler was a baby. And we now have a second baby. And we haven't signed with our first baby in, I don't know, two and a half years. Once the little one started speaking, we phased the signs out. And now we're starting to sign with our second baby, and our toddler is saying, Mommy, you're not doing it right. Daddy, you forgot to sign with the baby. So parents are amazed, and I've been amazed at how many of these babies remember these signs until, you know, when they're 4 or 5 years old, and suddenly there's a new context to use them with a new baby brother or sister, and the family has a built-in tutor because these little guys are pulling the signs out of their back pocket and signing with the babies, the new babies. So that's been quite fun. Gosh, there's been a lot of stories. There was one dad who called me. He was a pediatrician, and so he really understood kids, and he called me when his little boy Sam was, I think, 9 months old, and he said, Nancy, you're never going to believe what Sam did today. He said, Sam was trying to put a square peg into a round hole, and he eventually got frustrated. He put the block down, and he signed, all done, and he crawled away from the block. And I said, that's great. He told the sign, or he told the block off in sign language. And Dad said, yeah, not only that, but we had never used all done in any other context other than food. We used it whenever he was finished and we were about to take him out of the high chair. So Dad was completely blown away that his 9-month-old took this abstract concept of all done and applied it to a completely different situation that he'd never even seen it modeled in. So stories like that just give me the chills because I realize that babies understand far more than than we've ever realized.
Yeah. You know, I had twins some time back. And
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and so I'm wondering, well, what would it have been like, you know, if they could have communicated with each other early on? Have you had any experience with twins?
I have. I've had a couple families with twins, and several of them have said, yes, we need to take this class. Someone's always waiting. Someone's always twice as frustrated. We've got, you know, two little crying babies on our hands instead of one. So sign language is great with twins. I personally have not seen any of the twins signing between each other.
I was wondering about that.
I did see that, however, when I was a preschool teacher. I mean, my kids are as young as 3 years old when I was teaching deaf preschoolers would sign with each other. So I think it's quite possible. I've heard stories from other folks of twins signing between each other as early as a year and a half old. So it not only creates an amazing bond between the parents, but a much more positive bond between those twins as well.
Yes, you know, it also, as we were talking about research and you were telling the story about the little one trying to fit the square peg into the round hole, or maybe it was vice versa, it kind of brought back some dimly recollected studies with monkeys or with apes where they've taught them to sign.
Exactly.
And as I recall, the monkeys, or maybe they were chimps, showed some surprising, you know, there's always a debate going on, you know, have they really acquired language or not? But, you know, some of that research to me was very compelling to believe that in fact they had acquired language, and sometimes they put together unique sequences such as the one you described that seemed very suggestive of abstract thought.
Exactly. There's a center in Eastern Washington called Chimposium, and they were one of the pioneers in doing teaching sign language, doing research with chimps and teaching sign language to chimps to see if they did indeed understand. And just about 2 or 3 months ago, I think the first chimp that they ever signed with, her name was Washo. She just died. She was 42.
Oh, sure. Washo's famous.
Yes, exactly. And I felt bad. I didn't get up to see her before that. And many of my clients had, and they said, you know, it is phenomenal. They said they would see the monkeys, or excuse me, the chimpanzees signing, and like you mentioned, the copious research. And what I have read is that they did realize that indeed the chimps did understand sign language, and did understand language to a point. It certainly wasn't to the extent that humans can understand and express language, but one of the things that proved that there was an understanding was that the mama chimps would teach the signs to the baby chimps. And so they were passing that along without any intervention from the researchers. And also, the chimps would make up their own signs, which were iconic. So if they were not taught a sign, I think fan, for example, was a sign that they were not taught. And so the chimps made up a sign that mimicked the movement of the electric fan. And that was one of the ways that they could prove that the chimps understood. And from what I understand, Washo, one of her favorite signs was shoes. She was also obsessed with shoes. So again, a woman after my own heart.
Yeah, really, soul sister.
Dad, I didn't get up to see her. But that's what I tell people. I think, look, if chimps can do it, well, certainly babies can do it. And I think one of the things that surprises me at this point are the parents that are skeptical. And I think that skepticism comes from the fact that they still just don't acknowledge that their babies understand and are trying to express so much more than we ever thought as early as 5, 6, 7 months of age. So I think parents are often shocked that there's higher level cognitive thinking and memory and intuition and thoughts percolating up there at such a young age.
I'm surprised to hear that you run into skepticism. I could, you know, parents are so motivated to do well by their children. You know, they take them to soccer and get them into violin lessons and just get them, you know, scheduled right up to the neck. And here's something that I would think would just have great appeal to parents, and that you'd be flooded with quite a bit of business.
I do have a lot of business, and that is fabulous. I have a lot of business, unfortunately, in nights and weekends because my clients are napping half the afternoon. So it's a tough gig when your clients are napping most of the day. I think, like I said, the skepticism comes from the fact that parents are just a little overwhelmed and this little alien has been dropped into their lives, and I think they're a little fearful of the fact that they understand as much as they do. And then one little, gosh, nagging old wives' tale, I guess is what it would be. One little nagging old wives' tale that I still hear is that parents are afraid that if they teach their babies to sign, it's going to slow down their speech. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple reasons why that isn't the case. The system of made-up gestures that I mentioned earlier does have some fabricated gestures that involve sniffing, panting, and blowing instead of movement of the hands. And personally, I do believe that's going to slow down a baby's speech, because if you teach your little one to sniff, pant, or blow as a means of communication, they're not able to engage their mouth in a typical speech attempt. It's also very hard to discern as a means of communication. In American Sign Language, you would speak to the babies as you normally do, and then you just engage your hands. And so babies have the opportunity to engage their hands and continue to work on their babbling and their speech as they normally would. And hearing babies hear an average of 4,500 words throughout the course of the day. And I always tell my parents, believe me, you're not going to be signing 4,500 words throughout the course of the day. So your infant is never going to think, wow, this thing with my hands is so much more effective than what I've been trying with my mouth. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to talk anymore.
Ah.
And actually, speech is a natural reflex in all of us. Even deaf babies babble till it's no longer self-stimulating. And we all came to the planet with the ability and the desire to speak every language imaginable. And babbling becomes culturally specific by about 7 months of age. And it's just what is reinforced, what they're hearing on a regular basis. So there's really never a point where a hearing child is going to choose American Sign Language over speech. They realize very quickly that they can do much more with their mouth, and not everyone knows sign language anyway. Although the attempts that they use to sign with everyone is amazing. I've seen little babies sign in parents' homes, eat more when the dog is eating. So they're even trying to communicate with the dog in sign language.
Yeah, I was wondering if they would get frustrated with other adults who don't understand them.
Yes, definitely. And that's why I really encourage my parents to get grandmas and grandpas and daycare providers and all of those significant people that are in the baby's lives. They need to be on board. They need to be signing consistently as well, because the babies will start to believe, at least in the beginning, that if mom and dad understand the milk sign or the eat sign or the change my diaper sign, then that pretty lady that I'm with all day long when mom and dad are at work should certainly understand it as well. And after a while, they'll figure out that the dog isn't on board and the family cat doesn't care. But grandma and grandpa and babysitters and nannies should definitely be on board.
Yeah, interesting. So is there a point, you know, as they begin to acquire spoken language, does the ASL begin to drop out? I mean, it'd be wonderful, you know, if they would retain it, because it could open up wider communication with the deaf. It could open up later career possibilities.
So exactly.
So, yeah.
Most of my families report back and say that just that happened. As the babies were intelligible and as the babies were learning to speak, and once the babies realized that mom and dad understood them, the babies would naturally drop the signs, and that's usually about a year and a half to 2 years of age. And on average, babies that sign actually speak sooner. And again, because there was this jump start on language, so once the vocal cords are fully formed, some of my babies are often speaking in 2- and 3-word utterances from the very beginning. So oftentimes the babies will drop it, and the parents in some cases have been disappointed. Some parents have said, you know, we wanted to keep up with it. It's such a beautiful second language. But our little one said, no, I'm a big girl. I don't need to sign anymore. So I tell families, you know, let it go. Respect that. Respect that the child realizes they're a hearing child and they can speak, and bring it back if you have a second baby, or bring it back in the toddler years with music and story and stories and, you know, fun little games. And so many families have done just that. And like I mentioned earlier, some families report back that the first baby brings it back with the second baby, whether mom and dad wanted to. The first baby, who's now a toddler, is signing with the second baby in the family. Or one of my favorite stories, I had a client email, and she said, gosh, we took your class when our baby was 7 months old, and by 9 months she was signing quite a bit, and by 15 months she was speaking, and she said it was absolutely phenomenal. We just phased the signs out once she was able to speak. And she said she's 2.5 now and speaking incredibly well, and she said, mom said, we haven't used the signs in about a year, But occasionally, when I don't meet my daughter's needs immediately, she'll use the sign thinking I didn't understand her. So one day the little girl asked for a cookie verbally, and Mom said, "No, honey, no more cookies." "Oh, wait, let me show you the sign." And so she did the sign for cookie, like, "Silly lady, you just don't remember, you don't understand what I'm saying. Here, let me show this to you. This worked a year ago." So it's astonishing what they'll remember.
Hmm. Well, it does sound like you've got a wonderful career going here, and you said that you'd like to see it spread all over so that it becomes just a natural thing that everybody does for their children. So I would assume that there's room for others in this field. How would they get into it?
You know, you're right. It has taken off and other people have gotten into the field. And one of the things that I have, I guess, a big concern about is the quality level. And because this has become such a trend in parenting, I sometimes see people jumping on the bandwagon that I think are not qualified or materials that are coming out that really aren't respectful of the deaf community. And that's a big thing. You know, like I said, I'm a proponent for American Sign Language. And 20 million people in North America rely on ASL as their main means of communication. So we're borrowing from that culture and that language to use it in this capacity. So I really encourage people, if they're interested, I would hope that people are fluent in American Sign Language, have an understanding of deaf culture and the community that we're borrowing this from, have experience teaching and an understanding of child development. So I think if people with those credentials continue to keep the industry afloat, that would be great. But unfortunately, I've seen some people come along that maybe learn 60 or 65 signs and then call themselves a sign language teacher. And I always use the analogy, if you learn 65 Spanish words, would you call yourself a Spanish teacher, not understanding the whole language and the sentence structure and the culture that it came from? So I just really encourage people that are going to get into it to really do the legitimate foundation work to have an understanding, and also parents as consumers to choose programs that are based on those sorts of credentials.
Okay, well, that's an excellent caution for us to wrap things up with here. Nancy Hanauer, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, Dave. It's been wonderful speaking with you.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Nancy Hanauer. Personally, I find the idea of signing with babies intriguing. As you heard me mention in the interview, my daughter is about to have another baby, and I told her about this upcoming interview. I was surprised to learn that she knew about this technique already, and that there are these sorts of classes available in our own area. She didn't take advantage of these with the first grandchild. I'll suggest she check out the podcast and we'll see if that sways her to try it with the next one. However, grandchild number one is keeping her so busy, I'm not sure she has much time for listening to these podcasts. If you end up doing something like this, I'd love to hear about it. In the meantime, I encourage you to visit Nancy Hanauer's website. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of information on it. You'll find it at http://signingbabies.net. And I'll put this URL in the show notes as well.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. It'll all be fine. It's Shrink Wrap Radio. It's all in your mind. For insight into personal growth and the inner life, hear Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
Let me remind you that if you're listening to this show but not subscribed, please do subscribe. It costs nothing. On the right-hand side of each page at shrinkwrapradio.com is an icon that says Subscribe in iTunes. Just click on that, or you can subscribe at the podshow.com site. Now, I've just added a new page to our website at shrinkwrapradio.com, and you'll find it under the Promos menu at the top of the page. Just click on the Promos menu, and a couple of options will drop down. Promo Flyers is the one you want. There you'll find two Adobe Acrobat PDF files, for promotional flyers that you can download. There's one for academic environments, such as psychology department bulletin boards and so on, and another for more general environments, such as laundromats and supermarkets and so on. So what I'm hoping you'll do is to print out a flyer and make one or more copies and post them around on various bulletin boards to help others discover this show. This idea was suggested to me by a listener some time back, and I've finally gotten around to implementing it. In fact, that was one of the things that motivated the whole redesign of the website so that I could have drop-down menus. We were having more ideas than there were menu space to accommodate them. So the redesign allows me to add features like that. Once again, I'd like to remind you that my friend Jerry Trumbull will be co-hosting Shrink Wrap Radio Live with me again on Sunday, February 3rd at 10 a.m. Pacific. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com/shrinkwrapradio if you'd like to join in the live chat or call in via phone or Skype. The phone number is 646-595-4286, and it's a good idea to register with Blog Talk Radio ahead of time. We've got a couple of new additions to our Frapper Map. I'd like to welcome Axel in Germany, who writes, "I love the inspiration, and you reach far more people than are listening." Now, in case you're baffled by his assertion that I'm reaching more people than listen, it's because in an earlier email, he let me know that he's a Gestalt therapist, and he's been able to use things he's learned on Shrink Wrap Radio in his work with others. So I guess we are reaching more than just the people who listen. And I'd also like to welcome Chance from Fayetteville, Arkansas, who writes, "Love the shows, Dr. Dave." Well, Chance, I'm so glad to have you as a listener. You might be the only one in Arkansas, so I hope you'll spread the word down there, maybe by posting flyers. The sponsors for this show are, as always, Podshow and GoDaddy. Remember, you can purchase the domain name shrinkwrapradiopromotionalflyers.com by using the code SHRINK3 at checkout from GoDaddy.
Dr. Dave, we thank you for your humanistic, transpersonal, and existential approach to psychology. Congratulations on your awesome podcast.
Hello, Dr. Dave. It's Michael Nistler here. As my robotic friend said, kudos to you, and please keep those podcasts coming. We're all crazy about you.
Thanks, Michael, for that crazy transition. Now let's turn to some current emails. First, we hear from Axel in Germany, who I mentioned listing on our Frapper Map. He writes, "Hi, David. Thank you for your reply and for reading my previous note on your show. Actually, the interviews about Gestalt were the first I listened to. In the one with Daniel Rosenblatt, you talked about your idea to interview some of the old Gestalt therapists about the early days and the differences between the East and West Coast styles, as far as I remember. I always find it very fascinating how my therapeutic world grows as long as I'm open to that. I learned about the relationship to process work through your shows, and before that I discovered hypnosystemic therapy by Gunther Schmidt from Germany. It's a mixture between systemic therapy and the work of Milton Erickson. This approach fits into Gestalt very well because, for me, it closes the gaps I discover, especially with people who become very uneasy when they concentrate on their feelings. Scott Miller said in your interview with him that it's the outcome that counts and not the approach. In that respect, I'm interested in how different therapeutic styles understand healing. Is it only the disappearance of the symptoms? Is it the integration of the Jungian shadow? Is it growing? Is it different from client to client? Maybe you can add some pieces of the puzzle. Thanks again, Axel." Well, Axel, be sure to be listening to the Wise Counsel podcast series, which focuses very much on psychotherapy. There's no simple answer to the questions that you ask, and it differs from system to system what they focus on for, you know, what they consider to be healing. So for some, it might be the relief of symptoms, and for others, it might be, as you suggest, the integration of the Jungian shadow. So listen both to Shrink Wrap Radio and to Wise Counsel and hopefully some answers will begin to emerge. I do think there is a coming together of these various systems and more of a consensus than there used to be. Moving along, we hear from Alana in Queensland, Australia, who I erroneously in the past referred to as being from the UK, so my apologies for that. And Alana writes, "Dear Dr. Dave, of course I was listening. I haven't missed a podcast since mid-2005, and following from one of the comments made in the email section, please don't shorten the podcast. There are precious few opportunities to enjoy depth and far too many grabs in the media. Please keep it deep and rich." That was in response to my musing that maybe I would have a larger audience if these podcasts were shorter. I've heard from a couple of people saying that they'd rather that I keep it, quotes, deep and rich. So I'm just going to follow my own instincts about that and try to keep them right around an hour in length. Less if it works out, and try not to go too much over an hour. She goes on to say, "As an intermittent insomniac, I often listen to shrink wrap radio on my iPod in the middle of the night. It's now 4 a.m. here, and I've just orally devoured Jerry Olson's and was so inspired by the program, I was prompted to rise and write rather than fall back to sleep. I loved the interview with Dr. Olson, and thank you for passing my email on to her." You'll remember Jerry Olson did the interview on dolls. She said, "I particularly appreciated her acknowledgement and advocacy of the importance of somatic knowledge to healing and the development of children's spirits. I followed the links to the doll images and naturally love to see the dolls made by students. I sense a simpatico spirit reinforced to me by the inclusion of those beautiful dog personalities in her photograph on the Shrink Wrap Radio site. Unfortunately, one of those dogs just passed away. We have also worked on with doll making in year 8 with 13-year-olds, in which the girls made a me doll exploring a projected part of the self. Wearable masks are another part of the work done this year, done by this year level, in which they combine aspects of three animals derived from one of those very old personality profiling games whereby you select your favorite animal and write about its personality traits, and then another and another, the first signifying how you see yourself, how others see you, and finally clues to your deeper nature. The girls love it and are always surprised by the accuracy of the insights, and most importantly, they love to share what they have gained." Boy, that sounds really neat. If I was still teaching my Myth, Dream, Symbols class, I would steal that idea. I've used wearable masks in that class in the past. We would do a weekend workshop, and I'd have the students create a mask. But I love your idea of integrating three animal personalities. That gives it a nice kind of structure. She goes on to say, "If you're interested, I've attached a link to the school's virtual online gallery. The work is largely made by senior students and in a range of media, and the URL is long, so I encouraged Alana to come back and post that URL on the comments area. So I think if you look at the Jerry Olson interview and then go to the comments area in response to that show, you will find Alana's link to the photo gallery of her students' work. And believe me, it's well worth the trip. Very exciting images there. They are museum quality. I would buy them, I'll tell you, many of them. She goes on to write, "As you can see, I'm embarking on the podcast idea with the students, encouraging them to conduct online discussions about the making of their work and the concepts that underpin it. It's a pity I can't include the visual diary work too, as this is where the real process happens, leading to often profound images when you consider the maker is approximately 16 or 17 years old. I'm looking forward to exploring Dr. Olson's work in more detail and reading her paper, which I'll share with my colleagues." Yes, I did put a link to a paper by Dr. Olson, so you might want to look for that as well. She goes on to say, I sometimes wonder whether it's because the visual arts are largely silent endeavors that their intrinsic power is so often overlooked in education and indeed by the larger world, apart from the business side of the art market, that is. The artwork itself is only one side of a triadic relationship, the outward expression, I guess, equivalent to the ego. The real work, the process work, is hidden in much the same way as our inner life, our subconscious slash unconscious self, and the artwork makes this realm accessible to our conscious mind and to the viewer if they take the time to engage beyond the surface. That's so beautifully expressed, Alana. She concludes, thank you again for sharing your insights and your truly inspiring friends, acquaintances, colleagues. All the wonderful work you do so altruistically and creatively is food for my soul. What a banquet. And likewise, you are a real soulmate, and the images that you provided certainly reveal that, Alana. So I'm so glad you're out there doing the great work that you're doing, and with a younger group than college age. And it's so wonderful that they get exposed to this work at an earlier phase in their development. And the next one also makes some reference to Jerry Olson's show. It's from Thea, who writes, hello, Dr. Dave. I just finished listening to the latest show, the one on dolls, just to give feedback related to the length of shows and listenership and such. Personally, I enjoy the longer shows and your comments at the end and the emails and all, though I also skip through the musical transition. But I just want to remind you that, as you've said yourself, you can't please everybody. So I suggest you keep the shows more enjoyable for you to do. I also listened to Theater of the Mind, and the interview said she has 80,000 downloads for each show. Wow, it made me wonder how many you have. Her shows cover more New Age subjects than Shrink Wrap Radio does, but the quality of Shrink Wrap Radio is not a whit less than that one, and though that show is somewhat shorter in length, it is not significantly so. Well, I have to tell you, I have far less than 80,000 downloads per show, so I'm very envious of that show. She says, I have liked the idea of the Shrink Wrap Radio community, but I find I must withdraw a bit for now, as I have time management problems, and if I think about writing or posting and engaging, it just takes up too much of my mental time, not to mention the computer time that I really must dedicate elsewhere. There are only so many hours in a day. What did you think of the Macworld keynote? The MacBook Air is pretty cool. Best, Thea. Well, Thea, you've made some long posts in the comment area and sent some long emails, and I really applaud and appreciate that. And I can understand that you might need to pull back a little bit from that for a while. And I loved going to Macworld, and I got very excited about all the new Apple offerings. And I'm really sorry to see that the stock market is down and that their stock is doing poorly, when, in fact, their sales have been so strong and so good. So that's really too bad. And maybe I'll end up getting a MacBook Air, although I have trouble justifying it. I just don't do enough travel these days where I need a laptop. Okay, moving right along. Next, we hear from Rafal in Poland. Hi, Dr. Dave. Just listening to your episode on dolls. The part where you discuss the letters you've just received, one topic you pick up is the length of the episode and its influence on the numbers of people listening. I'm so glad everybody is responding to that issue. He says, I've observed that over the course of episodes, you get in more interesting and meaningful discussions with your guests. This makes episodes more attractive. This is the very reason I'm excited about your show. Going for the bigger number of listeners at the expense of quality and depth will endanger the show's value. I fully support them at today's length, if that matters. Well, it does, and I appreciate that feedback. He says, personally, in some cases, I would not listen to the rest of the episode if I have no time, focusing only on the interview and omitting the part where Shrink Wrap Radio mail is read. Well, I hope you're hearing your mail read out today. Yet I think there is definitive value to allow people to express their ideas in you addressing them. Whenever I have time, as today, I would stick around and enjoy it. One more time. Thanks, Dr. Dave. Rafal. So I think that'll wrap it up for the email today. As usual, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. Remember that in addition to emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype. Our name there is ShrinkPod, and alternately, you are encouraged to leave voice messages on MyChingo, and you'll find a link to that on the Shrink Wrap Radio website. And in the U.S., you can leave voicemails on our phone at 206-337-0622. And it's been some time since we've heard any voice from anybody in any of these modalities. Now, you might have been surprised by today's podcast on communicating with babies. I want to thank today's guest, Nancy Hanauer, for that. I had previously announced that we would be having a show today on Jungian sand play with Liza Ravitz, a Jungian analyst in my area. Well, she was sick last week, and I'm hoping to interview her tomorrow. So ideally, that's what next week's show is going to be about. So stay tuned. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind. Thank you.